This is Robin Collier of KCEI 90.1 FM, Red River Taos, and I'm here in Albuquerque with Greg Mello, director of the Los Alamos Study Group. And just this last weekend, he helped break the story in the New Mexican and the Albuquerque Journal on the fact that there are several other sites that would be far cheaper to make plutonium pits than Los Alamos. It's a quite complex issue. And Greg, let's just dive into it. Tell what the story is and why this is.
So plutonium pits are the cores, the fissile cores of nuclear weapons. Today, these days, they're all made of plutonium as the fissile material with other materials as well in form of concentric shells. They're not complicated, but they're very precise and they're difficult to build. The United States hasn't had an operating pit production factory since the closure of Rocky Flats in 1989. The pits last a long time. Exactly how long for each type and what compensatory measures are necessary is not something we are privy to, but we can bound the problem, and it has been bounded in unclassified publications that say that approximately 100 years is the lifetime of a pit. The plutonium itself lasts longer. It does radioactively decay and accumulates problems. But it becomes quickly classified and complicated scientifically, but the bottom line is nobody needs to make any pits for the stockpile, not now and not for a long time. Exactly how to quantify long time depends on the size of the stockpile, what warheads are in the stockpile, and whether you want to build a big factory or you have a small factory that just steadily operates and turns things out.
Right. And for quite some time, they have asserted that they really, really need to make these.
Yes.
And we've gone through a number of iterations. They were going to build this gigantic football-sized plutonium processing plant at Los Alamos. It slowly rose in cost from $1 billion to maybe $10 billion. I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but it just got extremely expensive. And basically you, the Los Alamos Study Group, filed a lawsuit to try to stop that, to do a full new impact study. And basically, though you lost the lawsuit, the delay caused the whole project to be canceled. Tell us what they're proposing now, Los Alamos, these modules to do the same kind of processing. A little bit cheaper, but still quite expensive.
Yes, and no one knows whether they will actually be cheaper in the long run.
Right.
So the idea would be to build underground workshops or factories, little mini factories, then bury them at the same place where the larger facility was going to be, and to build them out one step at a time, maybe. The law requires that there be two of them built at least, but there's room for six or seven on site.
And the goal is to produce 80 pits a year, is that correct?
Well, this is part of the problem. The goal is ever shifting.
Okay.
The 80 comes from the George W. Bush administration and indirectly from Los Alamos Lab itself. The Bush administration asked Los Alamos Lab, how many pits can you make? And they said, well, with the big new building that's now canceled, we could make 80 pits a year. And so then the analysis from the Pentagon was, okay, well, if we try to perturb that number up, it gets extremely expensive. And there's no reason to perturb it down. And the more we delay, then the faster we'll have to ramp up. So it looks like 80 is the number. So we require 80.
So this number is just made out of thin air, basically.
It's made out of thin air, and it comes from the contractor who stands to make billions of dollars. The original number was 50 to 80. And when people tried to pin this down, the answer was, well, this is a vague subject, and you can never pin it down. But last year, NNSA said, well, 50 to 80 means 80.
I see.
And now it means at least 80. And the latest, as of October, is that it really means 110.
Which is significantly more. Yeah.
Yes, because I think they want to have, and no, everyone's a little unclear, except for those who've been in classified briefings, but it's 30 plus 80. So you have two different production lines producing two different kinds of pits.
Oh, so that's where the 30 is some different need that they've developed.
And this may be, that number may be a feature of the Trump administration and the deliberations which are going on about building tactical weapons and bringing back new product lines that from the old Cold War.
Now, the other aspect of building these modules at Los Alamos, even if they decided today and they adopted the funding to do it, they couldn't actually begin producing pits in these new modules until when? Quite a few years, right?
According to NNSA, until, at the earliest, 2033.
So, what is that, 15 years from now?
Yes, the earliest, and the latest would be 2038, they estimate. Well, these numbers are telling a story that goes beyond the quantitative. They're saying, we don't think this can happen. We think this is impossible. And how that is interpreted on Capitol Hill as we learned in October when we were there.
Okay, well, tell us about this letter that you got a hold of, or whatever triggered this story in the New Mexican and the Albuquerque Journal.
Well, on Thursday last week, there was a briefing in the House Armed Services Committee and the Senate Armed Services Committee about the results of an approximately 400-page study of which site would be best to produce 80 pits per year. And this study was triggered by the skepticism that various parties in government, friends of ours, had toward the previous 2013 study, which was one of these the answer is cooked in from the beginning type studies.
Right.
And which said, oh yeah, Los Alamos is the place. And people in the Obama White House said, wait just a minute. You didn't look at the possibility of refurbishing facilities you have that are big and they're already built. And at least look at them. We're not going to approve this plan until you take a good hard look at the facilities you already have.
So already that 2013 study is 5 years old.
Yes.
There's been a lot of new developments. And for one thing, Los Alamos, the management has been raked over the coals for their poor safety record and their inability to implement things.
Right.
So there's other aspects that have changed. And then I guess these other sites, tell us what the other sites are that they looked at then.
Well, they looked at two sites. They looked at the Savannah River site in South Carolina, and they looked at the Idaho National Laboratory near Idaho Falls. And both of them have one has a mixed oxide fuel fabrication facility that is structurally almost complete, I think, but is still many years from being completed. It's a multi-billion-dollar project. It's a huge building. And it's not going to be used for its original purpose. It may be used for nothing. The other in Idaho, near Idaho Falls, they call it the fuel processing facility. There were things built in the late Cold War that were never really utilized. And
could be refurbished or
yes,
mm-hmm. upgraded or whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So. Now, a lot of people in the anti-nuclear movement, and I think your group as well, feel that there should be no pits produced at all, that the existing pits, as you started out this conversation, are totally adequate.
Right.
And what's more, we should be banning nuclear weapons. Why are we doing anything with this? And so, you know, for the people that oppose this development at Los Alamos, which in addition to the whole cost, there's huge dangers with all the earthquake faults, the poor safety record at the lab. You know, we don't really want it here, but do we really want it somewhere else? And what do you do about that issue?
First of all, we've had almost no support from any New Mexico group in nuclear disarmament for decades. These groups could not support no pits. They did not oppose the CMRR nuclear facility. Some of them tried to move new nuclear weapons factories into New Mexico. We spent a lot of time trying to stop building new nuclear weapons factories anywhere. But here, we could not get support from the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability for not building pits of any kind. But we persist in this.
I mean, can you explain why would a nuclear group not join you in opposing the production of pits? I mean, what's the rationale behind that?
It has to do with looking for a political and funding niche which is not too hostile to the Democratic Party. And it was felt to be unrealistic. It's a pretty common thing for the arms control community and its funders to come down to the political right of forces in the military sometimes, or in the Office of Management and Budget, or the libertarian groups like the Cato Institute.
I mean, in other words, they're saying, well, there's no way we can really stop this. We better take a position that allows us to continue funding from the corporate sources that actually are behind some of their funding. So we'll oppose this, but we won't oppose this. And we'll go along with a certain amount of development because it's impossible to stop anyway. So
yes, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's in the United States, the nonprofit community, the NGO community, is substantially controlled from the top by funders, and which are connected to the State Department. They're connected to large corporate interests, like you say. And this problem has really mushroomed in this century, since 2003-ish. And it wasn't so bad in the 1990s.
I mean, this is a problem that pervades the entire nonprofit community. These groups get formed, they identify a problem, they start attacking it. They look for funding. They find funding on a national source. I mean, for example, we're dealing with drug and alcohol use in northern New Mexico. Well, once the groups get funding from these national sources, which ultimately don't want to upset the alcohol industry,
right?
They propose these things which look like they're doing something.
Right.
And there's all this activity, but they never really address the problem because the source of the funds don't really want the problem addressed. And if anyone who's involved in the nonprofit community, just think of the different organizations you're into. This is a pervasive problem where foundations, national foundations, drive your program.
Yes.
And once you have your staff and you have to pay your executive director, you just don't know what to do. You don't, you know, in other words, if you don't have really independent sources of funding.
Yes.
You're just controlled by these foundations. And it's a huge problem, like I say, in the environmental community. And people need to recognize this as a huge... I mean, for example, in Taos, another big thing, the Taos Ski Valley Foundation, this billionaire just bought Taos Ski Valley. They have handed out hundreds, probably $500,000 in grants to all these environmental groups in Taos.
Yes.
Why do they accept this money? Because... they don't, you know, in other words, the need for funding outweighs the independence that they should be.
Yes. It's a serious problem. It's a problem in the churches. You know, you'd think that the churches would be radically approaching the crises in our society, but they're very timid because they're afraid of driving away just, you know, a handful of parishioners usually. And while we're talking frankly about this, everyone should be humble also, because it's difficult to figure this out.
Right. Where do you get the funding? You know.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I like to use in my head sometimes to help me this image of Coyote in the Roadrunner cartoon going over the cliff, and he's got carrying a sign. It says gravity lessons, and he's just figured this out. And it's not like he's smarter. He's on his way down. He's just figured this out. Well, a lot of people in the nonprofit world are not witting in the sense of a spy world. They are involved in a socially engineered system, which they're very sincere.
Sure.
And you can be very sincere and still be misled by the head of a coalition. You know, if you suppose you're involved in a coalition and 99% of the people are very sincere, all it takes is one person at the top of the coalition to walk into a meeting and say, this is the meaning of the coalition. This
right.
is why we're doing this, and we will now cut this deal with you.
Yeah.
And the people, 99% of the people, will never have any idea.
So let's go back to this issue of opposing the PIT reduction. As I say, one dilemma for people that are sincere and maybe are not really involved in the funding of these nonprofits is, so we fight getting pits at Los Alamos, and then they just move them to Savannah River.
Right.
And then the black community, there's a whole bunch of different nuclear facilities at
yes.
Savannah River,
yes.
Both conventional nuclear and the legacy waste. And we were just hearing a black leader there speaking about these
yes.
problems.
Yes.
What can you do? Do you say, okay, let's not focus on moving, let's focus on just stopping it completely? What is your strategy of how you approach this issue of just juggling it from one congressional district to another?
Yes, it's a really good question. We've tried to approach this in the most fundamental way we can. There's an onion of layers to these issues. There's just the good government. Then there's the, you can look at this through several different lenses. Starting at the bottom, they're fundamental ways to look at this. Nuclear weapons are being banned. We're very pleased to have worked on that, and that is slowly succeeding, although the United States and its allies are putting tremendous pressure on countries to keep them from signing. And that's what our spy agencies are for, developing means of pressure and blackmail of specific leaders. And we have our IMF, and we have our World Bank, and we have lots of other ways to put pressure on countries to keep them out of this treaty. But I think it will gradually pick up signatures. It's going to be another ceremony in the coming weeks and this year, and so we'll get some more.
Well, this leader in Georgia, one of the things that they talked about was, you really can't change the local support for these kinds of facilities unless you figure out what other jobs you could create. The big argument in our congressional delegation, it just brings all this money to New Mexico. We
right.
can't, have all these people lose their jobs. And there is a reality in that, that they have created this dependency on these jobs.
Yes.
If they move the pits to Savannah River, what would happen at Los Alamos?
Los Alamos would continue. So this is all political. The sheet that I'm looking at here, which one of our friends provided on early Friday morning, has a lot of blanked out areas. And those blanked out areas are they're all under the topics of risks and opportunities, but mostly risks. And all of the risks at Los Alamos are blacked out. Very curious as to see what those were, but if this goes to Savannah, the predominance of blacked out areas means this is all about politics.
Okay.
And the mixed oxide fuel fabrication in South Carolina was a $25-50 billion endeavor, and it was going to be income for generations of South Carolinians.
Because it would be ongoing conversion of this
yes,
fuel.
Yes, it's a big program, but it was stupid from the get-go, and it would never really work. So now all parties want, pretty much except the South Carolina delegation, all want to kill this. The right wing wants the money for weapons. And the good government people say, oh my God, this is like a black hole.
Right.
And so they need politically a consolation prize. And that could be pit production. And pit conversion is for dilute and dispose of plutonium. But that's another program that we think is going nowhere, and we don't like it. But Los Alamos, then, if pit production is taken from Los Alamos, there's already talk of a consolation prize for Los Alamos.
And what would that be?
Well, what's being discussed is Marie.
What is that?
Yeah, Marie Curie. It's matter and radiation interacting at extremes. Marie is a gigantic science project involving neutrons and protons and photons and studying materials and being a giant weapons design lab and a way to for physicists to and engineers to have a lot of fun. And it would cost probably a couple billion.
Right. So maybe not quite as much money as the pit production, but
and not
enough to keep Los Alamos in business.
Oh, yes.
Well, and they're still producing weapons, basically. That's
yes, it would still it would be more for weapon design, and but it would be a little more distant from the actual weapons, and it'd be funded out of weapons. But Los Alamos is not in danger of going away. We would like Los Alamos to go away, frankly. Right. We for 25 years, we did not want Los Alamos to go away, but now we're fed up. Los Alamos has been totally resistant to reform, and it'll never exist at anywhere near. There's no real raison d'etre for Los Alamos other than weapons, and its culture will always be weapons, and attempts to turn it into something else are impossible and fantastic. So,
I mean, a lot of people think, oh, they do all this other research. I mean, in a presentation yesterday at this conference I was at, less than 0.2% is spent on renewable energy research at Los Alamos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's a minute, tiny.
Yes, it's minute.
Yeah.
And it probably has a military application too.
Anyway.
And yeah. So people, there's this misconception about what that lab is about and what it can be about. No, you're not going to get cost-effective civilian science that does useful things for humankind up there on that mesa.
And you talked about this culture issue that, in other words, it's so ingrained in the way the whole lab is structured and funded in producing weapons and this very compartmentalized methodology where no one really knows the whole picture. They're just working on one little aspect.
Right.
To convert that into a real science lab that looks at, like renewable energy would be an obvious option, you'd have to just scrap it from the ground and just completely start over again.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's why it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And a lot of the compartmentalization is in the training, and it's not even imposed from above. It's imposed from within and out of ignorance. The modern PhD in physics knows very little about a lot of things,
right,
typically. Right. So we mentioned how do you sort of stop this more fundamentally? And we don't want to just move the plutonium P from one walnut shell to another. And I think that we've erred, not we necessarily, but partly we, have erred in implanting this issue in an environmental context and in an environmental justice context. And in any sort of identity politics context, it is not about personal contamination primarily. That has a component. And for workers, that's a very big issue because they are millions of times more likely to have a dose. So, because the more powerful ways to frame this have to do with the tax bill that's in the Senate right now. Just out of the Senate. Thank
right,
you.
But it has to be merged with the House bill, yeah.
Yeah. And the austerity, which is going to be attempted, the next turning of the screw to try to fill in that deficit hole. And the New York Times article this morning had an article about this did not use the word military spending. It's absent from discourse. The United States spends about roughly half, someone can look this up, I haven't recently, of its discretionary spending on the military and Homeland Security, the State Department, right. Nuclear weapons, all that stuff. And we can't have a progressive agenda. We can't fix our infrastructure. We can't get renewable energy. We can't do a lot of things, education, if we have that kind of priority. And that was sort of the raison d'etre of the study group back in the beginning in 1989. We said, okay, the Cold War is coming to an end. We need a peace dividend to rebuild our country so that we don't follow the Soviet Union over the cliff. Right. And we are following the Soviet Union over the cliff. They're coming back. And we are, however, headlong increasing our inequality, and the result of this angst in middle America is, of course, Trump. And it would be unwise to think that the opposition to Trump has this figured out. I don't think they do. So we have austerity and inequality at home, which is partly driven. I wish people could realize that the economists that say the labs are good for you, and the politicians, right-wing militaristic dollars bring militaristic right-wing human disposability politics.
Right, right.
You can't.
So I mean, they trigger all these environmental issues, but if you don't confront that primary problem, which is all the spending for the military, you'll never get those other things addressed. They'll just figure out some other way to pollute.
The environmental problems, which are real, which are real enough if you're close enough. You know, if you're right there on the spot, they're real. But for Santa Fe, you know, it's pretty far. And of course, the aggressive U.S. foreign policy, which has created the North Korean situation, the Syrian situation, and the refugees in Europe, we need to recontextualize in the bigger issues of transnational capital running everything, including our own country and our political parties, the climate crisis, the inequality crisis, and see our nuclear weapons problems through those big lenses and tackle them in a serious way, and not just try to see how we can, you know, work
solve
on
the symptoms, basically.
In other words, we don't
address
exactly.
The cause, not the symptoms.
Yes, the symptoms will just break out again, and some of them are quite intractable. We can
they have to be solved, but if you don't change the cause, new ones will always come back.
And we'll never pick up those voters and citizens who are alienated from this incrementalist discourse that doesn't really speak to their real problems.
Okay, well, we'll continue this conversation in another interview sometime. Give your contact information, how to get involved in Los Alamos Study Group.
Yes, our website is lasg.org. Our phone number is 505-265-1200. Call us. We're having a fall fundraising campaign, so that's always an issue. And we have projects that people could work on.
And you have an email list people can get informed on
a
regular basis.
So ask about that. My email address is gmello, G-M-E-L-L-O, @lasg.org, and we can get you signed up on lists.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Greg. We've been talking to Greg Mello, director of the Los Alamos Study Group, trying to delve into the intricacies of nuclear policy at Los Alamos Labs and the world. This is Robin Collier, Cultural Energy, KCEI 90.1 FM.